Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Martin Zender, and you are at another edition of the Revelation series. If you have never been to a conference, this is the time to go to a conference. The time is short. There aren't going to be too many more conferences. Possibly one more conference in late August, and one in Evansville, Indiana, one in Indianapolis. These are pending. I will give you an announcement. But back to the Birmingham conference on May 26th, 27th, 28th. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Here's how it generally works. Friday night is an informal gathering. I'm going to say 5 o'clock p.m. We'll meet at Laura Johnston's house. We'll have some snacks. We'll have some wine. And it'll be a great time of informal fellowship. Yes, it will be great. And Laura and Steve Johnston, they are great hosts. And so she will give you more information when you write her. And plus, we will have a formal announcement giving times. But I'm just giving you an overview so you know how to book your flight. Get your flight in there on Friday, folks. Book the flight in on Friday. Come to Altoona, Alabama, on Friday around 5 o'clock. I'll be there. You can meet me. We'll have a glass of wine together. Won't that be great? Don't disappoint me. Don't disappoint me. And let's see. What else I want to say about that? At Saturday, the conference will start at 9 a.m. This is how we generally do it. These are when the speakers will bring talks to you and present teachings from the Word of God. And we always have question and answer sessions. And so one speaker will speak for like 30 to 40 minutes. That's it. Then we have a break, then another speaker, then a break. And sometimes the best times of the conference are during the breaks when people talk amongst each other. Maybe there's three messages in the morning and then we break for lunch. We all go to lunch together. There's an amazing ribs place. It's famous in Birmingham called Dreamland. The best ribs you ever tasted. They have a giant brick oven in the restaurant, and they put the ribs in there on giant racks. It's amazing. We always eat at Dreamland at some point during the conference. Then we have two more, maybe three more talks in the afternoon, and we will break for dinner. We come back from dinner, we have a couple more. We stuff it in there because you're not coming to a conference to have spare time. No. It's either going to be teaching or fellowship. We hit it hard when you're here, but doesn't mean you can't go back to your hotel room and take it easy in between. Of course you can. Then Sunday is a half a day to give you time to go home. So Sunday, it's generally three talks in the morning, then we're done. And you can stick around a little later. I don't think my flight's leaving till maybe 9:30 p.m. So maybe we can go back to Altoona, which is an hour away from Birmingham. So that's the lowdown on the conference. Listen to yesterday's show for the email address of Laura Johnston and the address of the venue, which is a garage. But it's a nice garage. The Apostle Paul would love it that we have meetings in a garage. I have had meetings at airports. I've had meetings at dance studios. I've had meetings in pole barns. I've had meetings in hotels and churches, outside, inside. It doesn't matter. Wherever folks want to gather, that's where we gather. A psychologist's office, and that's the perfect place, isn't it, for us to have meetings. All right. I told you yesterday that the architect of the New Jerusalem is God himself, and that will be some building, that's for sure. As soon as I said that, it pegged me to a verse in Hebrews, a passage in Hebrews talking about the Hebrew people looking for a city whose builder and architect is God. You know, I love the book of Hebrews because it helps these poor Jewish people who saw the kingdom come so close in their grasp. The Messiah had been to visit them. And there were 5,000 people who came to Christ at Pentecost through the testimony of the 12, especially Peter. And yet the kingdom then withdrew because nobody foresaw a secret administration coming in via the Apostle Paul. This was an unprophesied thing, and so the Hebrews were left grasping. What happened to the kingdom? That was one of the main sayings back then, was what happened. And so Paul, being the expert in both evangels, the circumcision and the uncircumcision, Paul explains it to them in Hebrews, but he doesn't put his name to the book. Nobody really knows who authors Hebrews except me. It's obviously Paul. The wording is Paul all the way. Paul was the only one who had such passion, fiery passion, to take care of his own people and to secure them, to comfort them concerning their evangel. He doesn't put his name to it because at this time of the writing of Hebrews, Paul's name was anathema. I mean, it would have killed it because the Jews generally hated Paul. As soon as they saw a letter from Paul, they wouldn't have cared how helpful it was. They would have burned it. And so it's an anonymous letter, but it's obviously brilliant in its composition and vast in its scope. And I love this passage in Hebrews 11. It talks about these by faith. And I did a whole audio series on the book of Hebrews. Go to the new Martin Zender Dan Sheridan show on my website, martinzender.com. If you're not familiar with all the great features there, why? Why aren't you familiar with all the great features there? I have so much material free on my website. You can be listening and watching for 2 years. Go to the all-new Martin Zender Dan Sheridan show and look for my series on Hebrews. It's an audio series. Sorry, you can't see me. You can hear me. You can download it. And it'll be epicness on steroids. It is, because I love this book of Hebrews. But so I'm happy to once again talk about it a little bit here when we're talking about the New Jerusalem. Now, by faith, Noah... This is all people walking by faith, and I'm getting to the part where they're looking for a city having foundations whose artificer and architect is God. By faith, Noah being apprised, let me get the light here. By faith, Noah being apprised concerning that which is not as yet being observed. That was the problem. That's the problem of the Hebrews reading the book of Revelation, even. They're being apprised of something that is not yet being observed. John saw it because John went in spirit to the Lord's day. But technically, it was not yet being observed yet in the legitimate annals of time. John had to be transported in spirit. Noah, being pious, constructs an ark for the salvation of his house, through which he condemns the world and became an enjoyer of the allotment of the righteousness which accords with faith. It takes faith to build a giant boat on dry land when there's not even been such a thing as rain. Yes, there was no rain before the flood. Remember? The water came up from the ground and irrigated. By faith, Abraham, being called, obeys, coming out into the place where he was about to obtain to enjoy as an allotment, and came out not versed in where he is coming. Not versed in where he is coming. This is great. God sent Abraham out and just says, go. I have a place ready for you. Just pack up your donkeys, your mules, saddle Sarah up on the nicest horse you have, and head off to a place, probably not a horse, a donkey. Horses were generally used for war, and head out to a place, but I'm not going to tell you where it is. Isn't that like God? He's not versed in where he is coming. Now, we are versed in where we are going. We have an expectation of being seated among the celestials at the right hand of God with Christ, but there has been no PowerPoint presentation of this place. We have very little information concerning it. One of our guys, Paul, went up there and came back and was disallowed from even explaining it to us, from even writing one thing about it, which, as you know, ticks me off. So we're all here walking by faith. By faith, he sojourns in the land of promise as in an alien land. Sound familiar? We're in an alien land. I'm going to make a little analogy here between the Israelites and us, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob. Yes, they were dwelling in tabernacles. Isaac and Jacob in Israel, when they came out of the promise, when they came out of Egypt, they're dwelling in tabernacles, in little crappy little animal skin tents with strings and ropes and poles, and they had to pull it taut, and they had to fold it and roll it, and that's so humiliating when you look at the New Jerusalem in the Unveiling chapter 21, as we are doing. What a contrast. You have these collapsible houses that you can roll up, you have to stake them out, you have to pull them taut, you have to drive stakes, and... It's humiliating. the enjoyers of the allotment of the same promise. So this same promise is epic. You're going to inherit all things, and yet you're living in tents. For this is the money verse, verse 10 of Hebrews 11. For Abraham waited for the city having foundations, whose artificer and architect is God. That is this city we're looking at here. I think there's the writer to the Hebrews, Paul here, is looking beyond the glories of the millennium, and he's looking onto the new earth and the new Jerusalem on the new earth. And I told you that whenever the word earth is mentioned, Israel will have preeminence, and any members of the nations will have a second place seat at that table. They'll be waiting the tables. They'll be taking the orders. They'll be getting coffee. They'll be making coffee, getting coffee, serving coffee, pouring coffee. And after everyone else is served, after the Israelites have had their fill, then they will be drinking the coffee. But until then, the nations, even proselytes to Israel, are subservient to the big Israel boys. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Daniel, Samuel, the apostles, the sons of Isaac, Jacob. And they're waiting, even while they're in their little tents, for a city having foundations. And we just read that this city does have foundations, foundations being written with the 12 names of the 12 apostles, whose artificer and architect is God. Love that truth. And it's looking ahead to the New Jerusalem. And that's still Israel's city. The nations can come in. The nations must come in. The nations will bring their glory into that city. But it is chiefly for Israel. Now, the tabernacle in the wilderness was a very nice portable building. As far as portable buildings go, it's not even a building. It was like a tent. It was marvelous. It was well constructed, because God gave the directions for it. And here's the difference. Remember, God gave instructions to Moses on the mountain through the mediation of messengers, that is, angels, of how to build the tabernacle in the wilderness, and he followed directions, and it was a great thing. For a freaking tent, it was nice, but it was only a tent. It was not only, well, yeah, it was splendid. It had gold, silver, it had richly covered curtains, the design of its walls made it as rigid as possible for a tent. And yet, at the same time, it was light to carry. With the great technology we have, we are able to make tents that are very light. I've had many tents in my life. Being a transcontinental bicycle guy, I've carried mine home across states, and I've had some lightweight tents. But apparently, this thing was amazing. Very light to carry. They had to pack it up, you know, regularly, the Israelites did, in the wilderness, because God kept wanting them to move. They couldn't get comfortable. Sound familiar? We're aliens in an alien land, and Israel was not comfortable in the wilderness. They kept having to move. That ticks me off about my life. In the last 7 years, I've kept having to move. I am a man who likes stability. I like routines. I like ruts. I like my little ruts. Thank you. Don't take away my ruts. I enjoy my little ruts. And I'm looking forward to a city with foundations in the celestials. And the city, New Jerusalem, on the new earth is, I believe, even though it comes down from heaven, it's just a primitive, even that, is primitive. It's just a hint of the city we will be inheriting in the celestial realm. In the temple, the three walls were shaped like slim inverted V's. There were inner boards that leaned against the outer board, locked together by bars. It's really quite clever, like a Chinese puzzle, only it was a Hebrew puzzle, one of which, that is, the bars ran through the rings of both, where they met in a hollow space between them. That sounds like quite a structure. I wouldn't have mind seeing it. Anyway, Mr. Nock, as you know, accurately translated, the Hebrew, it's called the Concordant Version of the Old Testament. And people, by studying this, they've been able to reconstruct the tabernacle in the wilderness, and they have seen what an ingenious system it was, described to Moses by God through messengers. Why wouldn't it be ingenious? It came directly from the mind of God. And so it has been rediscovered how great it was through an accurate translation of the Hebrew. So A. Enoch believes that because of this, because the tabernacle in the wilderness had hollow walls. Let me try to demonstrate this for those of you on the laundry cam. A. Enoch thinks that the New Jerusalem's a pyramid. And he thinks that because of the construction of the tabernacle in the wilderness. He has a point here. I'm terrible at geometry. I have no spatial sense at all. I'm lucky to be able to park a car. When I'm backing my car up, I think I'm really close to the car behind me, so I'm really careful. And then I go out of my car and check, and I have like 5 feet to spare. So I have no judgment as far as space goes. I don't know how things fit. I can't work puzzles. I'm terrible. It was funny when I had to move one time. I had to predict how if my stuff would fit in a certain size pod that was going to be transported to another city, and I was off by like 3 pods because I have no idea how this stuff fits in anything. But anyway, the tabernacle in the wilderness had a pole in the center, okay? And this pole, if you're looking at the laundry cam, is shaped like an inverted V, like this, and there was a pole that ran on the top. Picture an inverted V made of boards. There's one board to the left and one board to the right. The boards meet in the middle, and there's a pole going down the middle. And then there are curtains draped on either side. And so the curtains go like this if you're watching the laundry cam, and they fall down then after they get to the edge of the board. They fall down vertically like this. And so the walls, even of the tabernacle in the wilderness, were hollow. They were hollow. But the point is that this formed a pyramid. I have this objection to that, the taking that and extrapolating then to say that the New Jerusalem is a pyramid, because I don't see this shape in the Solomon's Temple. In Solomon's Temple, we have Solomon's Temple more like a cube than a rectangle. Anyway, it still had hollow walls, that's true, but Solomon's Temple was like this. It was squared off at top from what I've seen, the cutaways. It's like level up here, square shape. There are rooms, vaults in the walls of the temple, of Solomon's temple, which imitated the hollow walls of even the temple in the wilderness. Is this to suggest that the New Jerusalem will have hollow walls where there will be storage? It was practical because there was storage space then in Solomon's temple. And Herod's temple as well, for the things of the temple of the sanctuary. It may be suggestive of a pyramid shape of the New Jerusalem, but I'm not making book on that. That's up to you, whatever you want to do. But here's the pattern, folks, and I'll close with this, is that God gives us a great expectation. God gives us tremendous promises, and then we are forced by God to walk through humiliating times. The Israelites, when they were given a vision of a city whose founder and architect is God, a city with foundations, unlike the tabernacle in the wilderness, they had to, in the interim, travel in tabernacles that had no foundations. Tabernacles that could be pulled up at a moment's notice and moved to the next town. This is disturbing to me. It is really commensurate with a planet that contains lots of water. Remember, the new earth is not going to have any seas, and so it's going to be solid. So this earth is not solid, and even those of us who travel upon this earth are not solid. We're always moving. We're disquieted. The only thing you can count on in this world is change. People move all the time. It's an epidemic. Nobody's satisfied. They want to go somewhere else. Stability is rare. Children who have stable families who live in houses for more than 2 years is rare. I know of military families who travel constantly. I talk to people who have gone to 10 different schools by the time they're through high school. I don't know what this does to people. I had a very stable upbringing. I think it makes them crazy, to use a nice term for it. And I think most of the world is crazy. And I think it's because we're not settled. We're all traveling in tabernacles. We ourselves carry the Spirit of God in a tabernacle called a human body. And it changes all the time. My body is ticking me off. As you age, your body starts to tick you off. Well, look, this is God's modus operandi. It's comforting to know that he sets up for us a city for Israel. Then I'm going to apply it to us. He sets up for Israel a city that has foundations, whose builder and architect is God. And they look forward to this. But God tests them in the wilderness, and they are called upon to exercise faith. And God gives them the faith. And the faith is that even though they don't see it, they expect it. Likewise with us, we have a formidable, dependable, solid, rock-solid home among the celestials. And in the meantime, we are traveling in these dilapidated tabernacles. But folks, that means this is a walk of faith. Faith carries great reward. God gives us faith. If you haven't, you didn't do it, you can thank God for it.